Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. In today's episode, we're delving into the journey towards operational resilience. We're going to explore macro issues, including the global trend of lowering interest rates, and we're going to speculate on the potential impact on payment volumes. Joining me today to dig further into this is Nick Botha, Global Payment Sales Manager at AutoRec, and Don Apgar, Director of the Merchant Payments Practice at Javelin Strategy and Research. It's so great to have you both here. Nick, to start things off and to set the stage, what are some of the operational pain points that you're seeing in the issuing and acquiring landscape? And to take it a step further, what are some approaches that issuers and acquirers can take to mitigate them?
Yeah, Rima, so you know, we see this quite a lot in our day-to-day. I think the way we like to look at this and how we help these organizations identify some of the issues that they have is really looking at the end-to-end process. And when I mean end-to-end process within their, you know, financial controls, operational processes, you know, their payment flows, et cetera, what I'm speaking about is, you know, we're looking at things from a data perspective, how they are handling their data, some of the complexities around the data that they're receiving from their external parties, you know, such as some of the schemes like Visa and MasterCard, even some of the banking institutions that they work with, SWIFT as an example, another one, as well as some of their internal maybe legacy systems that they're dealing with. You know, on the data side of things, we find a lot of legacy-based processes and also a lot of manual workarounds happening with regard to data. So, you know, data is a huge aspect of what we're looking to help those clients try and improve, especially within the issuing and acquiring space. Then that flows into the reconciliations. You know, what we're seeing more and more is that reconciliation is becoming an integral part of the success or failure of a middle and back office within a payments institution across the board, but particularly now with acquiring businesses really scaling up and growing, and the volume seems to be getting more and more with merchants and PSPs using these organizations more and more. And within that reconciliation, a particular pain point that's been highlighted to us is that with scheme fee reconciliations against the reports that Visa and MasterCard are sending these organizations. And then off the back of all of that, we look at how can these middle and back office teams effectively allocate investigations of any issues within their data or reconciliations in terms of workflows and reporting that they can get off the back of that. So that's really that end-to-end process where we're seeing some pain points within these organizations.
Yeah, no question. And considering the growth in the whole fintech space and how many companies want to play in this card payments, I'm a processor, I'm an acquirer, I'm whatever. And I think a lot of folks don't realize just how complex, especially when it comes to card scheme settlement, how many sources of data there are, how many categories of data there are, how many just sheer number of fee types to apply. I think people in general underestimate the complexity. And, you know, there's an added factor, too, with faster payments, right? Everybody's talking about real-time payments and FedNow, and it's like, how do we get the money faster to the merchant? Well, a function of paying the money out is being able to reconcile that to the settlement, right? So that's putting a lot of pressure on not just the reconciliation function, but getting it done faster. And to your point, there's so many kind of manual things behind the scenes. You know, it's the old pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole, global payments economy, Don, is looking to move to a more, instant settlement regime. And that's applicable globally. You mentioned the Fed now there, but we've seen that in the UK with faster payments. We've seen that now in the European Union with SEPA Instant. The demand from merchants and clients and businesses is to be able to send and receive funds safely, securely, and instantly. So with that all comes complexities for these payment service providers.
Yeah, without a doubt, especially with the sheer number of scheme fees to tie back to, it makes it very important to get the settlement not only done quickly, but get it done accurately.
100%.
Nick, do we think that with the recent headlines involving MasterCard and Visa, as well as the macro issues such as like lowering interest fees globally on the horizon, that we're going to see further increase in volume of payments? And If that's the case, what does this mean for those who are not as operationally efficient as they could be?
It's another, you know, really good question, Rima. I think the headlines with Visa and MasterCard, I think this has been some time coming. The idea behind the settlement is essentially that, you know, this is really targeted at merchants, SME businesses and merchants. They're looking to help save merchants money, i.e., you know, capping their fees over the next 3 years. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're looking to try and help merchants save over $30 billion in the next 3 years, is something that I did read. And I think that the idea or the concept is good. I think that merchants would be relatively happy with if they could save some funds. However, you know, I think this is only going to really be effective if the merchant operations is improved. When I mean improved, I think it's both internally on the merchant side, how are they dealing with that end-to-end process that we just spoke about in the previous topic that we discussed, from handling their data and performing effective reconciliation, but also in terms of the partners that these merchants work with. I think, you know, selecting the right acquiring partner, selecting the right software that's processing your payments, your gateways, etc., that have the same culture and the same goals as what your business does. You know, if you're a large merchant operating globally, performing things manually with spreadsheets and a large team of 40, 50 people is just no longer fit for purpose. So I think that the macroeconomic factors behind all of this sounds and looks good on the surface. But, you know, coming back to what we previously spoke about, I think there needs to be some improvement in selecting the correct partners to work with to validate the success or failure of what Visa and MasterCard are looking to do.
Oh, without a doubt, the $35 billion splashy headline about the lawsuit settlement, I mean, that was a 4 basis point rate reduction for merchants. I mean, that's not anything big, but the big news was in some rules changes from the card schemes that now allow large enterprise merchants to negotiate their own interchange fee deals with large issuers. So as an example, Target could cut a deal with Chase for a lower interchange fee in exchange for, we prefer Chase signage at the point of sale kind of a thing. It also opens the door for merchants to charge customers more for accepting cards that cost them more. So the merchant's still required to honor all cards. But as an example, a rewards card, the merchant can say, hey, if you want to use your American Airlines card, I pay a higher interchange fee, and therefore I'm going to charge a higher price for your purchase based on that. So, you know, the details of all this, you know, and we just talked about how complex the settlement process already is, right? And if you think about how the ways that merchants could take advantage of these rule change benefits that they got under the settlement, it has the potential to make a complex process many times more complex. So to your point, you know, it's really time for folks that are in this settlement ecosystem to take a look at their processes and say, is the way I'm doing it, to use your words, still fit for purpose, right? I think that's a great way to say it.
Yeah, and you know, another thing to think about is, I think it's common knowledge across the industry that any payment operations across merchant ops, across banking operations, even, you know, what we see in the asset management space and insurance and retail banking, when it comes to payment operations, you know, these guys are operating on really, really thin margins. The goal is to achieve more volume, more scale, and that's what we've seen over the last couple of years. But probably post-COVID, you know, the payments space has really just accelerated. But the margins are very, very small. And, you know, when you're looking at something like this, which might save a merchant, you know, 4 basis points on, you know, on a very, very small amount, that's not actually helping you generate more revenue over time. Because what might happen then is you might start to see more volume coming in. However, the cost of achieving that volume operationally is going up in line with the scale that you're achieving. So this is why, you know, what we say to the clients and when we speak to these organizations is really looking at creating an operational efficiency across your business through automation, through new softwares, through technology. You know, we're seeing a lot of AI come into the market at the moment, and really, really positive things are being said about it. But just looking at new technologies, looking at alternative ways of achieving operational efficiencies, which will then lower that cost of operation. And that really starts to increase your margins. And then, you know, as you're scaling up as a business, as you're seeing the benefit of something like what Visa and MasterCard are looking to help you achieve through scale, you're really going to start seeing a huge benefit on the income statement.
Yeah, that's so true. And I've spoken with, I can't tell you how many banks and acquirers in this business that, you know, don't have the underpinnings to scale, you know, as you pointed out. If you have to hire another headcount for every X dollars in volume, your costs are just going up with the volume. So you're not gaining any of those efficiencies, right? And to your point, you know, in the card business, payments especially being low margin, right? It's all about scalability, you know? And so you have to be able to scale the volume and not increase your costs in a linear fashion, right? And, you know, automation is the number one way to do that.
Absolutely.
Nick, throughout your conversations with clients, I'm sure that reporting requirements comes up a bit. You know, we're seeing that safeguarding reporting requirements are becoming more stringent in the UK and the EU, and they're coming to Canada and the US here. This is sort of like a twofold question. I'd like you to first explain, you know, what does this mean? Like, what should be like top of mind? And what are some specific challenges for payment service providers to be aware of, specifically in the US and in Canada? And what approaches can they take to mitigate them?
Sure. So, you know, just to for the listeners, you know, giving a bit of context in terms of what, you know, the question is there. The safeguarding regime in the UK and the EU is, yeah, there's a lot of scrutiny happening on the regulations currently. Organizations are having to go through rigorous audits, safeguarding audits. And essentially what the FCA in the UK and some of the regulators around Europe are looking to do is to ensure that in the event of any liquidation of a payment services firm, especially applicable to electronic money organizations, that their clients will receive 100% of their funds back. And essentially, you know, this means that payment organizations, electronic money organizations or institutions are not able to commingle their clients' funds with their operational funds. And the safeguarding regime is essentially there to, you know, ensure that those funds are effectively segregated and looked after in the correct manner. And this, you know, this is something that we've seen in the UK for a very long time. It comes off the back of a regulation in the asset servicing space called CAS. And now this is translated into what safeguarding is today. And now, more globally, what we're seeing is that regulators around the globe, namely Canada, Singapore, we've seen this in Israel, across the European Union, have looked to the FCA as, you know, looking for payment services companies or, you know, in the US, I think it's money service providers. They're looking at this as a best practice approach. So organizations across Canada and the US are really going to have to start thinking about what do those reporting requirements look like? What do the obligations to the regulators look like? And what do the obligations to their clients look like? So absolutely ensuring that you're working with partners, that you are looking at organizations that have implemented this successfully to leverage off their experience is definitely useful. I think also partnering with the correct audit firms, internal or external audits, to really help, you know, not just yourselves, but the industry as a whole to achieve this successfully. I think it's brilliant for the safety and security of merchants and clients alike that these processes are implemented. But it's a completely different way of looking at it. So, you know, firms really need to leverage off what the FCA has done in the UK, what the European Union's doing, so that we can, you know, create a global best practice approach to what safeguarding will look like going forward.
Yeah, excellent points, Nick. And it's a really an extension of, you know, talking about scalable automation. You know, so in the US, processors and acquirers have been responsible for reporting merchant sales volume to the IRS through a 1099 file. And, you know, inquiries, regulatory inquiries are becoming more common from the FTC, the CFPB, the FDIC, looking at the specific merchants, specific banks, specific parts of the payment ecosystem. And believe it or not, for the same companies that are struggling with 50 people in spreadsheets, as you say, with the reconciliation, being able to create what to a regulator seems like a basic report could be a nightmare. And so automating the settlement function and having the data organized and accessible, right? This, so being able to create reporting, right, and comply with any new requirements coming down the line is just an extension of that same process, right? So that not only are you you're automating and organizing your daily functions, but you're preparing yourself for new compliance functions so that you can respond to these without having to make it a big manual function.
I couldn't agree more with you there, Don. That's exactly it. And we work, you know, at Autorec, we work really closely with a number of different audit firms and consultancies that are, you know, doing these safeguarding audits. And, you know, probably for the viewers and for the listeners here today, some of the key points to highlight, as Don already has, but reconciliation, both internal reconciliation and external reconciliation, is by far the biggest issue that they've identified within these organizations. Manual processes, but not just manual processes, not enough audits and control around their processes. So that's something to note, is that you know you can always look to automate things, and there are new technologies that can help you do this, but ensuring that there's enough audits and control around what your employees are doing, how they're doing it, what your workflows are, making sure that those are managed by an effective, you know, tool, and that your case management type activities are all performed on a strict timeline, and then simply just making sure that the correct reporting is done off the back of that. So, you know, just bringing that all, sort of bringing what you said there together, Don, these are some of the pain points that have been identified already. So, you know, if you can get ahead of that in preparation for what's to come in the next couple of years, I would highly, you know, suggest that from what we've seen from our experience.
Yeah, that's really an excellent point. And I neglected to mention that. It's not just about requests for data, but it's requests for documentable processes. You know, mm-hmm. So when the requirement is that you have to do X, Y, and Z, you know, there's a lot of fintechs and neobanks and et cetera, especially in the US, that say, oh, yeah, well, we're compliant. But if a regulator comes in and says, well, show us your audit process, show us how you're meeting these requirements, right? That can be a huge problem if you don't have a process that's documented, that goes beyond just, well, this is what Susie does every day, right? So that automation is key in so many ways.
Absolutely.
You've both covered a lot of ground and already alluded to this, but I'd like to bring this full circle and leave the listeners with like a few key takeaways. But, you know, Nick, what are some of the reconciliation issues that issuers and acquirers are experiencing? And in your experience, what does a good financial controls process look like to ensure that there's more optimal reporting for these organizations?
Sure. So I think having a robust financial controls process in place is key. Don mentioned it in one of the previous answers there, that automation is absolutely key to achieving this. Now, automation can be achieved in a number of ways, but the way we like to look at this process is look at it as a single process rather than a number of different processes. You might have different business units within your organization looking after a number of these processes, i.e., if we're thinking about data, typically, you know, we don't really see the finance team or the treasury team managing the data in today's world. We typically see probably a data team or an engineering team looking after that data, the financial data that these organizations are managing on a day-to-day basis. You might have an operational or finance team looking at reconciliation and management reporting and month-end reporting and sign-off. And then you may have a treasury team allocating funds and looking at reporting to ensure, you know, that your stakeholders, both internal and external stakeholders, have the relevant and correct information. So yes, there may be a number of different business units operating these functions, but we like to look at this entire process as one. Each of these processes need to be speaking to each other. So, you know, your data needs to be effectively reconciled, which needs to be passed through workflows, which needs to be effectively reported against. So looking at solutions, looking at partners that can help automate those processes, bring all those processes into a single source of truth rather than looking at using disparate systems and disparate processes. Definitely another thing to mention is leverage off what other organizations are doing. Everyone has their own culture. Everyone has their own way of doing things, but definitely learn from some of your competitors, but also some similar organizations that might not be competitors. You know, that is definitely going to help educate and create a different culture and a different way of doing things in the middle and back office. And yeah, absolutely think about more global macroeconomic things that are happening, not just within your geography, but what's happening outside of your geography, because it's likely that we are fast moving to a global payments economy, essentially, rather than looking at things per geography. So that would just be my takeaway from some of the highlights from today's session.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I have to call out that you said is thinking of this as all single process, right? So when you think about, you know, the ingestion of data, the use of data, the reconciliation of the settlement, all the compliance needs, right? The auditable process that's documented. They see so many companies that are growing fast in the payment space because, to your point, the volume of payments is just increasing. And companies kind of get locked into a break-fix mode, you know? It's like, oh, you know what we need? We need a report. Oh, risk is asking for a report. Finance is asking for a report. Customer satisfaction is asking for a report. And I've seen companies that actually run off multiple databases that don't align with each other to drive multiple functions. So a report generated for one department, it's the same report generated for another department, has different data on it, right? And the totals don't match. You know, I would, just to build on what you were saying, I think it's for any company that is growing in the payment space, helpful to take a step back and either bring in a knowledgeable resource or just look at the whole landscape and say, how do I build one process that encompasses all these needs, as opposed to taking it, you know, one problem at a time and then winding up with it with a fragmented process that's, even though it's automated, is not any more efficient or reliable, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, with all of this, another thing is probably for the CFOs out there, you know, I would strongly suggest looking at allocating effective budget for your technology stack within the space in the next few years. It's all good and well saying, you know, you're wanting to improve these processes. For payments organizations, the money is always rarely spent on the front office, right? It's always spent on making things look really nice and flashy, you know, really spent on customer acquisition. It's a very competitive space, Don. So we typically see a lot of the budgets being allocated towards achieving the market footprint, essentially. But without effective solutions helping your teams in the back office, it's really not scalable. And, you know, the money that you're spending on the customer acquisition on the front end is not going to be as effective or as useful for you if you haven't set your foundations up correctly. So, and this actually comes off some feedback. I was just working with a client this week, in fact, that mentioned, you know, our organization typically likes to spend a lot of their money on the front office, but they've since looked at shifting that. So just something to consider as well is effective budget allocation for things like improving your tech stack going forward.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you don't have to look any further in the US than to read through some of the consent orders issued by the FDIC around just this kind of thing, because, you know, companies start out and you spend your money on the product, right? Because that's what you're going to sell to customers. And, you know, you continually reinvest in the development of that product. But at some point, you need to step back and say, okay, I need to build infrastructure, right? I need to make sure that I can now scale this, the delivery of this product, right? And build that robust back office. Because if it's not visible to the customer, you know, today, then, you know, money doesn't get allocated towards it. But at the end of the day, these processes will become visible to the customer when they don't work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you both again for your great insights. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.